This is Margaret Cho, and you're listening to The Bicast, podcasting for the bisexual community.
You put the B in LGBT. You put the B in LGBT.
Welcome to the Bicast, podcasting for the bisexual plus community. This is Amy Leibowitz, and I'm here with Faith Cheltenham, and today we are talking to Gray Crosby, the subject of the viral BBC social video, I Left Part of Myself in the Closet. Welcome, Gray. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, thanks for having me. My name's Gray Crosby. My pronouns are they, them. I live in Glasgow, Scotland, and I identify as bisexual. I also identify as queer, non-binary, transmasculine, all those labels, and I am a poet.
Very cool. Very cool. Thanks so much for coming to the Bicast and joining us. So tell us more about this amazing video. I shared it. I cried. Everybody cried. Did you cry? You cried a little bit too, right? Right. Who didn't cry?
Right.
I mean, it was so good. Like, I cried twice, maybe. So yeah, like, you know, how did that piece like come up for you? Like, you know, like, did you just one day like boom? Like, was that a one take, or was did you write that for a while? By the way.
So I wrote it like to be made into that video. I got speaking to some people at the BBC social, and there's a guy, Sean Leonard, he made the Time for Love video. It went viral. It was about being gay in 2018. And he made that video, and it was really amazing. And so I was speaking to him, and he worked at the BBC Social at that time, and he said he was making this new strand of poetry, and the name of it was Fess Up. So it was like a series of poetry videos on the theme of confessions in some way, and he asked if I wanted to be involved. I was like, yeah, sounds great. But I didn't really know what to confess. I was like, I don't really know, like, what. And he said it didn't have to be serious, it didn't have to be really personal. It could be something more comical. But I think I've been thinking a lot about my sexuality and about my gender at that point. And I do use poetry quite often to, like, kind of figure my own stuff out. It can almost be quite therapeutic, and so I thought I'll give it a go writing this poem. I thought it might be a bit too personal to share with the world, but I'll have a go and write it and see if it comes out. And then I was quite happy with it when I wrote it. Still quite nervous about it going out into the world when it did.
Once you had it written and you were getting ready for the video, mm-hmm. Was there more to that process? Did you just have to submit it, or how did that end up coming together?
So I was emailing Sean for a bit. He was speaking to a couple other poets about their videos as well. I sent him like an initial draft and said, like, is this the kind of thing you're looking for? And he said, yeah, this is great. This is exactly what I'm looking for. So we kind of emailed backwards and forwards a few drafts. He had like an idea of length, and he wanted this sort of repetition element to go through the poem. And that was one of the things in the spec that initially said was I'm looking for a conventional poem that has some sort of repetition through it. So like this kind of repeated line. So mine was, when I came out, I left part of myself inside the closet. So we kind of talked a little bit and edited the poem a bit shorter. A good few bits got cut out. And then we started talking about how we were going to make the video. And initially, Sean had an idea of using an actor to do the cutaway scenes and having them naked and, like, pulling clothes on, and asked if I wanted to do that, and I was like, no, I don't think I'm quite comfortable with being naked on the internet.
you're like, I'm good.
Bearing my soul through poetry is, yeah, that's enough. Yeah. I'm not going to be physically naked.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So then he got me into the BBC, which was really exciting, going into the BBC building and getting a wee pass, you know, like visitor's pass. And we filmed we filmed the poetry, and then it was a couple of weeks later we then filmed the cutaway scenes, which we actually filmed in his closet in his bedroom. I like sat in his cupboard with all of my shirts hanging in his wardrobe, and filmed those scenes there. Yeah, that's kind of how it all happened.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting choice, you know, I mean, with the closet. I mean, because it's, you know, it's the reality of the poem, it's the reality of your life, and it's the reality of bisexual, pansexual, queer individuals that we often are forced for safety to not be able to share all parts of ourselves, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that definitely. There are many people within bi plus community who don't have that access, if they're people of color or visibly black or visibly native or of color who are differently abled or disabled. There's so many different people within our communities who aren't seen.
Yeah.
So your video, I thought, was a really great, the fact that there were some moments where you touched on that specifically, that I thought were important, you know? So it's kind of like this, felt like a bit of a mission statement for non-binary bisexuality. But I was like, let's go. Because every non-binary bi person I've known has actually taught me quite a bit about race, history, and or what they're, you know, thinking or knowing or meeting people about, especially within white anti-racism. So I was interested to know about, you know, what kind of gave you that opportunity to be like, you know, did anything just say, like, was there any moment that was like, okay, I'm done being in the closet on this, I have to be seen, and then you're pursuing this opportunity and accepting it? Or is there any, like, feeling that came to you as far as why you were very proud to do this, kind of, to be seen in this way, and this dual way, too?
I think it was a lot to do with coming to terms with my gender and exploring my gender. Because, like as I said, like, in the poem, when it, like, I came out is when I was wee, and I thought, yeah, I'm gay, brilliant, like, that's easy. Like, I'll just be gay, that sounds fine. And I really felt so uncomfortable with being attracted to guys at all. I felt like it felt so wrong. I was like, I'm just a really bad lesbian. I thought, I'm just, it just didn't feel right at all. And then as I started to think about my gender more and became more comfortable with my masculinity, that I then started to finally be a bit more comfortable with being attracted to men. Because for a long time, I really wasn't. I found so easy. The thought of being part straight was just terrifying. I was like, no. It's only actually really been the past couple of years that I've really kind of started to kind of accept that part of myself. And then I've been a lot more open with my gender the past couple of years, and like socially transitioned sort of thing. And now I don't feel I feel quite ashamed about being bisexual. I did feel like there was something wrong about it, and not wrong about liking being, you know, biologically female but attracted to girls. It was this thought of being attracted to men that something somehow felt wrong. Mm-hmm. And then as I've kind of become used to it, and also been so aware that I'd be anxious to tell people that I was bi, and I was like, that's ridiculous, like, that's so, like, it's so ridiculous that I've like met a lot of other people, especially since in this video, who felt the same, who said I felt too anxious to tell people that I was bi, and who previously identified as lesbian, or likewise, I've met a lot of people who people assume to be straight, and because they're in a heterosexual relationship, they have been quite nervous to admit that they're bi because they're worried that people are going to like question them and say, "Oh, how can you know?"
And I think
married with a husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people get really upset at it, right?
Mm-hmm. It's almost like you need to prove how you know that you're bi, you need to list all the experiences you have and qualify as bisexual.
Well, the whole thing resonated for me. So I'm non-binary, but I don't call myself transmasculine because I'm essentially like kind of, I don't know how to describe it. The only word that I've ever found that really resonated for me was androgyne, which is like you're all the time both and. And that's how my experience feels. Or it's a little more complicated than that. But it really resonated for me watching that and going, oh my gosh, you know, so many of those feelings are very familiar. And feeling like I married a man, I married a heterosexual cisgender man. So it is very validating to see other people, other non-binary people, other bisexual people who are talking about their complicated feelings and their complicated experiences, because that just resonated a lot with me. And it's so interesting hearing a different perspective. And for me, coming out as bi was like the big, I'm punching the world in the kidneys, but admitting that my gender was not simple, that it was messier than that. And, and beyond the binaries, that was more difficult. That for me was the one, and that's the one where I will tell anyone who asks me that I'm bisexual, I don't care, but telling people that my pronouns are they and them, and correcting people when they do misgender me, or even just acknowledging that, is really hard. It's especially hard as parent with school-aged children, and how are other parents going to react to that? Will they respect my pronouns? They have, mostly. Just clearing that up. They have. But it's hard to know ahead of time.
No, it's definitely, I find that really difficult as well. I think one of the best things about having done this video is the amount of people I've now been able to speak to and meet who like have had similar experiences. And feeling like, oh, there's other people out there. There's other people like me.
Have you had any pushback from the monosexual community? Have you had pushback from straight or gay and lesbian folks or cisgender people?
No, not really. It's been like mostly all good responses. I think I live in quite a queer wee bubble. Most of my friends are queer, and like some of my family are queer, and it's, yeah, I think I live in quite a queer world. I actually sometimes forget that like cis heterosexual people exist sometimes, and I'm like, oh yeah, I forget that's all out there. And the amount of like hate and discrimination that can be out there as well. Usually I find that on the internet more than anywhere else in my life. But no, yeah, responses are mostly really good. Someone at the BBC, one of the producers, who is a trans woman, she called me the day before the video came out to warn me about the comment section and to maybe stay away, and also that she was going to be watching the comment section for the video, as where I think two or three other moderators around the UK the day it came out to make sure nothing hateful was posted, which was really lovely. I felt so taken care of. I was like, that's so lovely.
Yeah, they need to do that for everybody. You know, that needs to be like standard. But I mean, it's like, why don't even have comments if people are going to be that nasty all the time? We just expect that.
I know. It's just so unnecessary.
Like, turn the comments off. Like, people are like, oh, don't turn the comments off. I'm like, no, I delete my comments. You come to my page, you say some shit, bye. Bye.
It's like, just see you. Don't watch it if you're so upset by it. Like, if you don't like it, just don't watch the video. It's like, just,
I mean,
just
I
don't.
I've seen, like, you know, it's just, you know, so it's very unfortunate. But, no, I definitely thought that there was a fairly positive response. But it seemed like it went quick, right? I mean, it kind of went, how many views did you end up having, do you know, or how many?
I don't know how many views. I know it's been shared over 1,000 times, and it's had over 1,000 likes or reactions on Facebook. I don't know the views, but it was a lot. It was a lot more than I was expecting. It was a lot more.
Because
it's great,
but
also terrifying.
It's a social video, so you can't see, like, the view count, right?
I think you can. I think you can. I just can't remember what it was last. I remember watching it up to I think it was like 30,000 or something, and then I was like, oh, I'm looking, I freaked out and stopped looking at it for a while. But I did get like a lot of shares, and like I was quite surprised because some videos like do so well on the social and get shared a lot, and others don't really. And I was kind of, I wasn't too sure how this one was going to go. I wasn't too sure if people would kind of get it if it was too kind of specific an issue being bi, non-binary. I didn't know if that was something that not many people would relate to or relate enough to. So it's been really nice seeing the amount of people that do.
We're so glad to see it. We're so glad to see it.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
I'm really glad that there's people who've enjoyed it.
Oh, I think a lot of people. Everyone that, I mean, I shared it all over the place, and people seem to be really just moved by it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely. I think it was a very moving video talking about, you know, these realities of what it's like for trans people, for non-binary people, for people who are different. I recently came out as intersex gray.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, I just did a panel at Harvard University. It was the first time I've ever spoken publicly about growing up intersex and basically hiding it most of my life, right? That's what happens for a lot of people of color who are intersex or gender nonconforming or have different facets, right? You know, the demonization, weaponization of black and brown trans bodies is a real life impact, right? That's why so many people are dying. That's why, you know, I tell people it's not just that black trans people are facing the worst oppressions, it's that black people are facing catastrophic house on fire as a whole things happening, right? And so all black trans people will therefore be part of that. You know, and anybody who's disabled will be part of that. Anybody who faces multiple intersections, you're black, trans, and disabled. You know, you're going to be facing it at higher rates, right? People get the intersectionality really wrong. They think it's like this superpower thing, when in fact it's just a get-you-fucked-faster situation. So, excuse my language, but I like to, like, you know, explain to people that, you know, if you say you're transmasculine, non-binary, and bisexual, right, or you're non-binary and bi, or you're these things, all these things, they multiply to produce not just moments of difficulty, but moments of crystallization of thought.
Oh my gosh, yes, that phrase, yeah.
Right? Do you see it, right? So it's just think. It's like, boom, you got it, boom, right? So when Sylvia throws that first brick, it's boom. This is wrong. Do not do this, right? And Sylvia Rivera is a great example of a person who's forgotten to be a bisexual person. As a trans Latina in New York starting Stonewall, she's also a person who's important to the bi movement because she identifies as bisexual and she organizes with bisexual community. So it's like one of these things of like, our history is so important to know that. She thought that, it just reminds me a little bit of how people are trying to push back, right? And this really felt also like a real strong refutation of binaryism, like of thinking that bisexual means binary, right? Mm-hmm. And that's always, to me, been a huge mistake on the mistake base that people make all the time about bisexual people, that we like men and women. Meanwhile, a fuck ton are actually ace. Anywho, but like, just put it out there. Like, a lot of people are asexual. Yeah. So it was just interesting to try to think of really great ways that people who are most affected by these terrible slurs, right? That bi is binary. For bi non-binary people, this has always been an amazingly terrible thing, right? To hear, because it just gets right to the heart of what is misbelieved about bisexuality, instead of believing it to be about being able to be attracted to more than one gender, which leaves open, therefore, the question and strongly refutes that there would be such thing as just two genders, right? Also, Amy, I want to point out that Boy Wives and Female Husbands, a seminal work on African homosexualities and gender identity, includes 500 different words for same-sex and gender identity variances across the continent.
Wow.
So you might want to look there, too. and just expand the reach about how you think of, like look for different words, right? Because it's not to say, oh, I will take this particular word from this particular culture. It's to say, oh, I learned more about the availability of ideas. And then
right,
I go,
right, yeah, like, I don't
let me learn how to pronounce it correctly so I can tell you. You know?
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I tell people. Always do that. Go to Google. But you know what I mean? It's this idea of knowing that this exists because it's out there for every culture, right? So Italians have this, Irish have it, Germans have it, British have it. Like, every single culture in this world has a history of queerness and gender identity variances other than cis and straight.
That is really interesting. So, I mean, I guess that gives me the opportunity then to look at my family was very cultural when I was growing up. We come from multiple different cultures, but unlike many families, that was really strongly emphasized in ours. So I may be able to look to my family's culture to what words did they use themselves just as our family, to describe different experiences that they had just within our small unit and then our bigger community culture. So that's that's a good point. I mean, I guess it's something I've been searching for ages because describing what it is, and I was so uncomfortable because I would feel uncomfortable anytime I did anything that seemed too feminine because that isn't, because I don't identify with woman or female. So anytime I did anything that seemed feminine, oh my gosh, I'm doing non-binary wrong. Which is kind of a ridiculous thing, but that is why that was more of a bigger struggle, I think, and why it's so validating to see something like a video where someone is openly talking about their own experiences of how that looks for them, as opposed to, well, this is what it's supposed to look like. There's not a rule.
Right, right. Well, I think it's also super, super good to have, like you said, all those things, and in addition, you get this, you know, flavor of, it's just basically a younger voice articulating truths for a generation, hopefully, that will hear them, right, and be able to reach back and find the ones that still exist, right, the elders and icons that haven't been taken by cancer or HIV, homelessness, or suicide. Right, or the various disparities that affect bi plus people at much higher rates over the course of our lives and lead to lower life expectancies overall. So I feel like it's a really great opportunity, you know, pieces like yours, Gray, to kind of tell everybody about them and say, hey, everybody, do you know about this amazing thing? Because, like, people should know about it. And if you know about, like, and if you understand this, then you get us. Right, and you get more of us.
Yeah.
Right, you get more.
I feel like we have been limited. I feel like we have been quite limited in the media. You don't see some people don't even know what non-binary is, and I feel like so much of it is just haven't been exposed to this idea, this concept that there could be more than two genders. They're just so, this is what they've been raised on. They're so stuck in that man, woman, and when you try and ask them to use they, them pronouns, it sometimes just blows minds, and they're like, what, like. That doesn't exist, that's not a real thing, that's a phase, that's a fad. And that's why it's so great, like, seeing, you know, that there have been non-binary people across the world since forever.
Yes.
And I think it's really important that people know that and realise that, and it's not just this sudden fad that's come about. I think the internet has done a lot to help non-binary people, you know, meet other non-binary people and realise we do exist and help us, you know, form our own words for things and our own ways of, like, sharing our experiences.
Yeah.
But obviously, we have been around for ages. It's not a new idea
and
at all.
Leaving room for spectrums, too, you know what I mean? Like, my experience as a Black intersex person is super, super different from white intersex people. And I would say that's because I'm Black, you know, for me. Real deal, like, just every single thing is different from the things that my parents were told in the hospital to the surgeries and what they were told about them to my experiences growing up to how I was identified or misdiagnosed by doctors. to the experiences I had of, you know, physical harm and trauma for medical professionals, right? Every single way, it's just one of these things where that affects the way people approach my gender, the way that they approach my bisexuality, the way they approach my bi, intersex, gender self. You know what I mean? So for you, were there other intersections that, like, drove you to this conversation? Do you, are you also a part of neurodiversity or disabled or anything different also to call out and to call home to and bring to the table? Great.
I mean, I struggled with my mental health a lot growing up. And I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder when I was, I think, about 19 or something. And my mental health is a lot better these days than it was, but it was something that really affected my life for a long time. And it still does. And that's another thing. If I'm not writing about gender or sexuality in my poetry, it's usually I'm writing about mental health and how those two things do interact.
That's so good. That's so good.
I do write about mental health a lot. I also have dyslexia, which is just a bit of a nightmare when you're a poet, really, sometimes.
How do you handle that? Do you do anything different? Do you have any tips and tricks to share with our listeners?
So, I think the way my dyslexia really affects me is with processing information, especially to, like, things like taking instructions or sometimes things just like listening to poetry. So like, I go to like a lot of poetry nights, but I actually find it so hard to concentrate. My brain really struggles to process information that way. So I think it has affected the way I write poetry, because when I write something, I want people to understand it and for it to be accessible to people, especially people who maybe don't always come to poetry nights, are not used to having to concentrate really hard for long periods of time, or maybe have dyslexia and find it really difficult to concentrate, or something else that makes it hard for them to concentrate for longer periods of time. So I really try and write poetry that is accessible and people can understand. I think just because I do struggle with it so much. And the great thing about doing performance poetry is that, you know, there's no spelling mistakes when you're speaking. You know, people can't hear spelling mistakes. So that's a really it's a really great thing about doing performance poetry. Although whenever I'm performing, I have to memorize the poem. If I go up and try and read it off paper, I really panic, because I don't trust my eyes not to skip a line, or just not to be able to read what I've written, or not to be able to read my handwriting is a common problem. So I always try and memorize the piece beforehand. Interestingly, I actually find that quite easy. I'm quite good at memorizing. My brain works in really weird ways, it turns out. I can't listen to someone read their poem, but I can memorize a couple thousand words like quite easily, which is very handy, which is good.
Yes, no, that is. Yeah. I know that's like a little bit, having a crazy memory. I have hyperthymesia, or the inability to forget one's own memories.
Okay.
It's not fun. Going back to birth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so interesting. But I wanted to ask you about, as far as the I was just noodling a little bit on the disability and the mental health things. I wanted to ask and just say to you, thank you so much for sharing that with us, and also, you know, identify that I'm so glad that you're doing that, right? And that you're making accessible content. So I just wanted to say thank you for doing that too.
You were talking before about, I think, about writing as a way to process through a lot of these complex things. So did you want to say anything else about that?
I'm not sure. I definitely do use it as a way to kind of process things that I'm thinking and things that I haven't even figured out yet. And it is quite good for that. And then at the same time, there's the dyslexic brain getting all tied up.
It's all good.
I do mostly performance poetry. I do write for the page as well, but I do a lot of performance poetry. So, and a lot of the things I write are usually quite personal. Not always. Sometimes I write silly things, but a lot of the poems I write are quite personal, and I have sometimes used these poems to then to figure things out in my own brain. And then I get up and I share them in front of this whole room full of people, and it's things that I would not be comfortable sitting down with a close friend and talking about. I write poems about things that I wouldn't be able to talk to people about, but by putting it into a poem and finding a different way to say it, I can then stand up and speak to a whole room of people. And the one of the really cool things about that is then quite often you get people coming up to you and saying, like, oh my God, like, I relate to that so much. And then you start having these conversations about things like mental health and gender and sexuality. Especially mental health, I think, is a really good one to be talking about. And then people can come up and speak to you about it. And it's kind of starting that dialogue that I think otherwise doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. Day-to-day life.
And Amy, you know what that's like for sure, right? As far as that unlocking via the writing.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what I was asking about, because I think that was the first time that I had the experience of processing through some of these gender things was writing. That I wrote mm-hmm. things and then went, where in my brain did that come from? And what do I do with that information? So that really resonated mm-hmm. with me hearing you talk about that being a way to process. I actually have several writing colleagues who talk a lot about this being the way to express things that we just can't say any other way. That we can say it. Mm-hmm. I write fiction, so I can use a character's voice that isn't me to say things that I really mean. So I think that's mm-hmm. a little different.
Yeah.
It seems like the poetry seems like it would be even more personal because you're getting up there and saying, well, this is, you know, these are some things, some truths in my life.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I'm also a slam poet, Gray.
Oh, cool. Brilliant.
I know. Weirdly, strangely enough, in 2006, I was on an Emmy-winning show appearing as slam poet number one for a show called Black White about race in America, produced by Ice Cube.
Oh.
But I have to say that mm-hmm. in that process of becoming, you know, of getting on stage and saying this poem that I had memorized, that mm-hmm. process kick-started my ability to be on stage. Mm-hmm. Right. It wasn't until like I successfully went through that audition, kind of like how you were talking about earlier with the BDC social, I feel. It wasn't until I went mm-hmm. through that process and then mm-hmm. did this thing, and then it was on a television show, and it was like a thing, and it was like not a big deal, but it was like something, you know, that like mm-hmm. I went to myself, oh, I think I can do this. I think I can be in public and I can talk to people. And so for me, that was in 2006, just during that, you know, but it's, for me, slam poetry has always remained like this very truthful thing that exists as this kind of tool to capture attention and to leverage people's heartbeat, basically, right? To hear mm-hmm. poetry and hear words spoken at a cadence, with a rhythm, with an intent.
Okay, so is there anywhere that we might be able to find you or your work online, or not really, because you mostly just do this as performance rather than videos?
So I have my poet Facebook page, which I can send you the link for.
Okay.
So on there, I do mostly post about like upcoming performances, trying to convince people to come along. But if I get anything published, I usually post it there too. I have a flash fiction chat book coming out this summer, okay. which is quite exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's been published by this great wee independent publisher who are based in Scotland called Knight Errant Press, mm-hmm. and they do loads of great wee queer books. And they're based in Scotland, but they do publish people from like all over. They had an anthology which explored the gender binary. The first volume of that came out last year, I think, and there's the second volume coming out, I think, either this year or the year after. And they also recently published a small book called Queering the Map of Glasgow, inspired by the Queering the Map website. So they did this Queer in the Math Glasgow, and I've got some poems in all those books. So yeah, they're a great e-publisher, and they're doing my my chapbook, which is called Love Pan Fried. It's just kind of a collection of slightly weird flash fiction pieces.
That's really cool.
And your
and
Facebook
hopefully we'll do
is,
more videos.
Yeah, and hopefully more videos. Your Facebook is at Plant Powered Poet, P L A N T P O W E R E D P O E T, Plant Powered Poet. If you were to go to Facebook and put that in, or Gray Crosby Poetry, and that's G R A Y space C R O S B I E space Poetry, P-O-E-T-R-Y, you'd find Gray Crosby Poetry on Facebook and be able to like their page, learn more about where they're appearing, possibly like or support the Lighthouse Edinburgh Radical Bookshop, among other things. That's on your Facebook. But it seems like a cool Facebook. Everybody should go there. Let's, come on. So I think that would be a really cool thing for people to do, because I think that people could definitely keep up with you, and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to help keep promoting your content and more of your bi plus poetry and, you know, bi affirming poetry along with other bi writers that we, you know, Amy was talking about a huge list, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, there's a lot.
You know, like, we really have some amazing, powerful voices, and, you know, you're definitely one of them, Gray Crosby.
Oh,
so yeah, absolutely. I think that's an amazing video, and I'm so glad that it brought so much joy to so many people, and, you know, it's such a cool kind of thing to see. So
it's really great that I've had this response. it was such a scary thing to put out there in so many ways. It was really like a coming out video as well, because so many people came up to me afterwards and were like, oh, I didn't know you were bisexual. I thought you were just gay because you're with Lisa and all this. And I have had a lot of people coming up to me going, oh, I didn't know you were bi. I don't think a lot of my family knew I was bi. So it has been like a real coming out experience, like really out of the closet now. So we're like putting such a personal thing out there. It's been really amazing, the response it's had and the people I've been able to speak to about similar experiences through it.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it really is. It's just remarkable. It was really wonderful to see this video, and just, yeah, it's neat. It's very affirming.
Yeah.
So I think we're gonna wrap up our time together. Is there anything you wanted to add before we wrap up?
No, just thanks for having me and for sharing your experiences as well. It's really great speaking to other people who have similar experiences, and yeah, especially people so far away, not just in Glasgow.
that's neat connecting with people in different parts of the world. Well, thank you so much for being here, Faith. Thank you. And you can find the video I Left Part of Myself in the Closet available on YouTube under BBC Social. We will have the link available for this podcast, and we will also have the other links that were mentioned in this podcast available on the Bicast website. Remember, you are not wrong, you are not broken, and you are not alone. You are a human being, you are bisexual plus, and you have community. Bye.
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 If you teach bird to sing, she gonna learn to fly. If you let her sing, she gonna fly. If you let her sing, she gonna fly away. If you teach a bird to sing, she gonna learn to fly. If you let her sing, she gonna
transcription services provided by Bind's Transcript and Typing Services. Just say it, and we'll type it. As leaders in the transcription industry, it's their vision to help business owners reach their project goals for their organization or company by transcribing or providing general office support. They're transcribing what I'm saying right now. Their staff is readily available to assist. Order now and get up to 20% off your first assignment. Regularly 99 cents a minute. Celebrating 11 years in business. And thank you, Fran Bynes, for your volunteer activism. Find them at www.binestranscriptions.com.
The views expressed on the Bycast do not necessarily represent those of Bynet USA or the Bycast crew.